I'm Lisa.
And this is the Paid Media Playbook, where we talk to marketing professionals about their challenges, tactics, and triumphs.
Join us here at Double Z Media for weekly conversations about media strategies for marketing leaders.
Welcome, Kathy Roeder from the Port of Seattle. Kathy has just been promoted to Chief of Staff at the Port. Kathy's going to walk us down the path of what led her to where she is today.
I started my career working for a member of Congress. So my first job is his like front desk person, receptionist, right? Answering the phone, answering the mail, making copies, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that's how I started. And I stayed in that office for a couple of years. There's a ton of turnover in DC. People change jobs really quickly. Early on in your career, you should change jobs pretty frequently anyway, mm-hmm. whether you're in the mm-hmm. same organization, moving up or changing mm-hmm. orgs. But I early on really wanted that press secretary job. It just looked fun and kind of had that like fancy, it's on TV, it seems mm-hmm. sort of fancy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's the job I wanted. And it was one of the early points in my career where I asked somebody, how do you get that? And they're like, well, you have to have this certain kind of experience dealing with reporters. I'm like, but one of the main rules was nobody's allowed to talk to reporters. So I'm like, okay, well, the rules are I can't talk to reporters, but I can only get this job unless I have experience talking to reporters. How do I do that? So I got really lucky. I'd been in the office 3 years with two different jobs, and our chief of staff moved to New York, and our current press secretary, who had a bigger job than just press secretary, had like a couple things under him, moved into the chief of staff job. And I was like, oh, maybe. And they were like, with many sets of training wheels, yes. So they actually told me it's easier. We already know you. We like you. We can manage you. You're a known thing. It's easier to sort of teach you than hire somebody else. And that was an early career lesson for me about just like showing your value in an organization and like having them want you enough that they're willing to let you flex into a different role because you've proven yourself.
Awesome. Yeah.
But we had zero budget. I mean, like congressional offices get no money for marketing. We had an email newsletter. We actually created the email newsletter while I was there. And uh-huh. we had, this is a long time ago. I don't even know how we may have had a voter file or some kind of,
yeah,
like we may have gotten something that was publicly available that we used, but like super clunky technology and old, where you're like, you have macros that you're in.
Yeah. Image. I remember that. And like, you had to, it was like such a big deal to even put together the format.
Yes.
Like to format
the template.
It. Yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, I've cried at least twice over email newsletter formatting.
Wow.
Yeah. But when I stayed in DC for a while, I left the congressman's office. I really wanted to work on a presidential campaign. Mm-hmm. And ultimately my goal is to work in the White House. So there's 435 members of Congress between the House and the Senate, and each one has a communications director or a press secretary. And I figured my path to get on a presidential campaign was through comms. And I was like, there's a lot of competition among Congress, even though they're not all Democrats, but I think I need mm-hmm. to go somewhere else to stand out more. So I went to go work for the AFL-CIO, which is the labor umbrella organization. And labor has obviously a lot of close ties to Democratic politics. Mm-hmm. So it was a good place to start kind of making some connections. And that was smart strategy for getting to a presidential campaign. And I ended up working for a guy named Dick Gephardt, who ran for president twice. He didn't win either time. He ran in 88. I was on his campaign in 2004. Oh, wow. He dropped out during the primary, and John Kerry ended up winning the Democratic primary that year. And I moved from, it's not difficult to move from one candidate to another. Mm-hmm. So I was able
at that
to,
point, they need people. So they're
going to Tennessee, mm-hmm. which is literally what happened. I went from New Hampshire to Tennessee in like a day. and then to Ohio, that's exciting. And then back to DC, and then ended up on the general. And of course, he lost. And then after that, it was kind of a massacre for Democrats that year. And I moved to New York after that and moved to issue advocacy. And so all of that career up until then had been like for people, individual candidates or elected officials. And then moved to New York and worked for a firm called SS, which is now owned by Saatchi & Saatchi. Mm-hmm. And they were mostly an advertising firm.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But they had a lot of love for politics and would every now and then do kind of an issue advocacy campaign. Mm-hmm. They did like Rock the Vote.
Yeah, exactly. Ago. They're well known to be like just really thoughtful, creative too.
But I was not a creative. And that was my first time understanding the word creative.
Yeah.
And understanding creatives as a category of people.
Yeah.
Mainly by being told, you are not one. Like, those are the creatives.
Are you a creative? No, I'm not a creative. Yeah, we're paid media. Yeah.
I was like, I'm creative. And they're like, you are not a creative. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I guess I didn't.
No, it is funny to treat it like that. Like, do you have the creative? Mm-hmm. Is the creative ready? I mean, meaning it's a noun or a person.
Yes.
But in either or, it's not a description.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? An adjective.
Yeah.
And also not me. That was the thing they made really clear. You are an account manager. That's what you are. And I was like, okay, I get it.
Stop giving your opinion. No, yeah. Just kidding.
But that was fun. I mean, I didn't have any budget or buying strategy opportunities there, but they were really collaborative in terms of campaign development. And so there were a lot of opportunities, and it was an amazing experience working at a shop like that, just because you could really see creative development. And, you know, maybe you watch advertising campaigns now and you're like, how'd they come up with a lizard? Yeah. And I'm like, oh, I know.
You were in the brainstorming meetings. Yeah.
I definitely know somebody was like, what about a lizard? And a lot of things that you think like, that's dumb, or I would never do that. If you just put everything into it and really believe in it and sell it as a package will work.
But throw everything against the wall and then find that thing and then own it and
commit to it.
Yep.
But you made your way to Seattle eventually.
So I really loved working for SSK. It's an amazing firm and with great leadership, but I wasn't very motivated by the corporate work in the way that I had hoped to be. And I was really still, I think, kind of discouraged about the loss in the presidential race. And then the ramifications of that. And I was like, I don't want to be too political, but really upset by the war in Iraq and the role of the United States there. And so I decided to go there. I had some friends who had participated in an NGO, the Saddam Hussein regime had been toppled and they were trying to set up a transitional government. So there were tons of NGOs that were active in Iraq trying to like establish a society, because one of the conditions of the transitional government was that anybody who was part of the Ba'ath political party, which had been Saddam's party, couldn't be part of the new government. So you took every technocrat, everybody who like knew the passwords for running the water department and exiled them. Which I don't know how you do truth and reconciliation peace processes, but like there is a technical loss of information when you take all the people who have been running the government and kick them out. So like everybody was just kind of like, now what? And so there were a lot of international actors sort of helping,
trying to triage.
Yeah, let's restart the water treatment plant and figure this out. And I was participating in their political party development, which was such a fascinating process because it had been a dictatorship for so long. One of the things that we were doing when we were there was working on publicity. And in Iraq, all of the media is paid because the print media there is not advertising based. So you pay for coverage. Mm-hmm. So there's always an assumption if you're having an event that you're going to pay for the reporter to come.
Wow. And there's never any like, there's no PR in that way. Meaning you're not trying to get a story. What if nobody paid? They're just not going to cover this really important thing.
Probably not. There is a culture around paying. reporters. And I wouldn't even necessarily...
So that is so manipulated, right?
Well, it is, except there's like 700 newspapers.
Oh, gotcha.
So there's so much print and there's TV. And I think the TV works a little bit different. I don't, you know, we only had TV coverage on one event we did. So I do think like the TV might work a little bit differently. And you do have like Al Jazeera and bigger cable networks that I think are run a little bit differently.
They
are. For print, you're pretty much like, you're going to give that reporter a stipend. You're definitely going to give them lunch. You might pay for their ride. And when you open the newspapers, there's actually like not a lot of ads.
Because everyone paid for
they're just chock block full stories.
With nothing that said sponsored content. Yeah. No. This is it.
So that it's was understood. Really interesting to me, too.
When you pay for it there, do you have any editorial control?
Tends to be positive. I don't read Arabic, so I can't say like whether all of our coverage was great. And you know, the press conference is like a big tradition there, and they love press conferences. I mean, this is a long time ago.
Sure.
But they're like, no one will come to your press conference unless you're paying. That was the experience I had. I can't say if that's everyone's
across
experience.
Across the board, but yeah.
And also, this was 2006, so things may have even changed more. It was a very difficult time in... I mean, this was like David Petraeus in the Surge days.
God.
So like anybody trying to work as a journalist in Iraq at all was a saint and doing really heroic work. So it's such a different, I just hope nobody reads that as like a judgment.
Well, it's very different from the Port of Seattle now, where I know local newspapers absolutely write articles without you asking for it. And then sometimes even that you'd rather they not, perhaps.
Yeah, no, that's true. So yeah, so I started working at the port 8 years ago as the communications director there. And we were at a really important time in terms of the way the media landscape is changing, not just in Seattle, but everywhere. And newsrooms just have fewer resources to devote to particularly like government and especially a lot of the storytelling and kind of brand awareness that the port wants to do, where we're like, look at this great thing we did in the community. And it's kind of like, is it on fire?
Yeah, exactly. It leads.
It's
right?
Great. And they're like, we're busy. So we had to kind of talk about, did we have our communications structured in the right way to do positive storytelling, with knowing, sort of recognizing that the media might be less and less of a partner in that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big part of the team did a rebuilt the webpage, which wasn't the purpose, but as they were going through the rebuild of the webpage, they built a blog, knowing that owned content was going to be a bigger and bigger part of our strategy. And prepared for a really robust email. We had like one email newsletter at the time, really robust email marketing, and just kind of laying the groundwork for the content first storytelling team that they have
today. You're like building your first party data so that you're getting so much more relevant over time. We have so many stakeholders, so many different departments that need so much data and so much expertise from like every aspect is.
And we're very cautious. You know, ports are really big cybersecurity targets. And so there's a lot of security.
That's such a good point, too.
It's kind of like there is no zero tolerance for failure. So there's a real aversion to any risk that would be like, well, this would be great for data and for audience targeting and like all these things. And if there's any kind of like a hint of a security risk to come with it, it's not like. That's
such a good
out.
Point. The port is everything. Like, it's such a big deal.
At some point during this journey, you know, working on the blog and working with news outlets, there was a decision that this organic coverage isn't enough.
Yes.
What was that decision-making process like?
It's iterative, right? You know, there wasn't like a day where we said
you didn't wake up like
hey. It was like we can't cover it, like she said, right? Like, you can't cover it because it's hey, we are doing this for the environment right now, so we have to pay for it to get those stories published.
I mean, anybody who's working professionally in communications understands you need to have an integrated strategy. And, you know, we knew we didn't have like that's the best practice and that we didn't have it, that you need that you need to be covering off on your own content. You need some paid. That's just, I just think of it as air cover. It's just mm-hmm. always on. And then, you know, you can like key campaign moments really focus on your earned. Mm-hmm. And that's the way I was sort of trained, just like the plan.
Yeah.
I was really growing more and more frustrated that we didn't have all the pieces of that best yeah. practice. And it's not an easy, you know, the port is not a place that's really comfortable spending a lot of money on advertising.
Mm-hmm. Right. You don't want to always be blowing your own horn. You want other people to.
That's so the third culture. Party.
Yep.
So the culture. And also, like, be careful with your dollars. Mm-hmm. That's definitely a factor.
Yep.
And also, I think there's also a cultural thing in the Pacific Northwest, too, that's just kind of like, you don't want to seem like you're, mm-hmm. like,
ever. Ostentatious or yeah. whatever. I mean,
standing out.
Yeah, much, yeah,
like
yeah.
The nail that pops up, or like the tall poppy, you know, yeah. gets the
under the radar. Yeah,
right. So it's like, oh, this is
nobody's driving Lamborghinis everywhere here. Like, you don't see that much here, like you would in San Diego.
Right. So it's hard to be under the radar though, and like try to deliver your message.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Like, we have to be low key, but nobody knows. So. Yeah.
What a couple things helped in that. Well, some really great leaders, I think, inside the port. And that's probably most important, you know, for any organization, is you can't have a communication strategy only come from the communications team. Mm-hmm. You have to have supporters.
I am.
And so the managing director for the airport, a guy named Lance Little, is a really great marketer. I mean, he's also like a really great managing director for an airport, but like has just a great eye for communications and is very talented in communications. So he knew how important it was, and he asked for it. He wanted more support, especially as we had big projects coming yeah. forward, and said, you know, I want people to understand why we're doing this. Mm-hmm. So having those supporters outside of just like some great communicators being, this is what we should do, but having supporters ask for it was really instrumental.
Absolutely. Do you feel like there was an original channel that you focused on? And do you think that was the right thing to focus on?
Oh, what a great question. You know, social had always been, I think, mm-hmm. a question for us, just because mm-hmm. we know our audience is on social media, and it's from a cost perspective, so much like you just mm-hmm. can enter at a different point than television.
For sure.
Yeah.
So social just seemed achievable, but TV is kind of still like in a lot of ways the holy grail, I yeah. think, just because people see it. Mm-hmm. And we've always talked to you about like, it just helps when people see it.
It does. And, I mean, yeah, especially with the port, because it's very diverse, and the reach that you get with TV is, meaning the stakeholders versus the public versus everything. I mean, yeah. There's just so much reach with TV, and especially with news, because, you know, we buy a lot of news with you guys so that we can be kind of in that. You know, news and information. People are gathering information, and then we have a...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I know people are seeing the social, because particularly like on...
It's measurable. Well, unlike TV.
There's yeah. that. But even like some of our paid social, like on Facebook, I can see the likes and comments, and yeah. I see people I know who I work with liking and commenting. So that's, I know they're seeing cool. the content.
Yeah.
They'll never tell me.
Yeah.
But if they see it on TV, they'll call me.
Yeah.
I'll be like, I saw our ad. Same
with billboards. Billboards,
yeah,
right?
Right?
The billboards are like, I could have three billboards, and the client's like, oh my God, like the employees are so happy. So yes. it's
really different. I don't know what it is about social. It's like, you know, they're seeing it, but they're not.
Well, it's targeted.
It just fades into the...
We're targeting the actual client. We're not targeting your stakeholders, but it matters.
But even when the stakeholders do see it, I do think there is a cachet to being on the television.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That you don't have with being on mm-hmm. Meta.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Agree. Totally agree with that. So the one thing that I think I've always kind of like undervalued is the streaming ads.
Television. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Or radio, the mm-hmm. pod is yeah. streaming.
Because it's super targeted. Really at, meaning we could, and I it's love not, geo-targeting.
It's like, not skippable.
Yeah.
You're locked into it.
Yeah. And we know how many people watched it. We actually know it's not some Nielsen estimate.
Yeah. So that's, I think that's a really exciting channel, is the streaming for for video and radio or podcast. But I think when we were first initiating this work, wasn't really on our radar.
If you could give yourself one piece of advice at the beginning of your time, let's just say at the port.
When you first started at the port.
What would it be?
Oh, you know, I don't have any advice for myself at the beginning of the port because I don't have enough distance. But I do have a piece. I actually have a piece of advice from the job I left right before the port. And actually this just came up recently with a colleague of mine who had a superstar employee give notice without like really kind of any warning. And that's exactly what I did to my boss when I left to go to the port. And I really hurt her feelings that she had mentored me and, you know, would have surely been sad to hear that I was job hunting, but I think would have rather been a partner in that than like me calling her while she was on vacation in Idaho and been like, wow, something happened faster than I thought and I'm quitting. And she's like, wait, what?
So you wish you would have like kind of communicated, this is where I'm at and what I would have, this is what I'm thinking. Just so you know, this is the, like, give her a heads up.
Yeah. And more. So I did change roles within the port recently and had been really transparent with my manager. And even before I applied for a different role inside the port, but like had just shared with him, I think I'm kind of reaching the end of what I have to contribute on this and would love to have somebody else take the reins, and was even brainstorming with him on some people I might talk to. And so that would be my one piece of advice, is kind of like, don't shut. If you have a good manager, and I've only had amazing managers, then like treat them like they're amazing and let them be an ally and bring them in.
Do you have a green flag for what would make a manager who you would trust with that kind of professional development?
You know when somebody believes in you. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can like nail it down to one or two things specifically, but if you feel like somebody believes in you.
Yeah, who has your back. Like I want the best for you. I know that with me as a boss leader for a long time, when somebody would leave, I was like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I see what you're going to do and I totally support that. You know what I mean?
I think there's one other piece of it too, is like, it's knowing your value in the organization. And I think people are afraid to tell their manager they're going to leave because they think they're going to be like retaliated against, like they're going to get pre-fired. Right. Right. But if you're,
that's a good point.
If it's, you know, I am too valuable to pre-fire.
Right.
That like
let's make this a positive transition.
Yeah. I'm on the hunt. Mm-hmm. I will keep you informed. If you have advice for me, I'm open to it, but I'm going to keep you.
That
I'm going
to be such an evolved way of thinking. And I do believe that. I mean, I know like as a Gen X boss, that would be wonderful. You know what I mean? That would be just such a great community.
Yeah. Cause you can start planning and think you're not going to fire them if they're great. No. You want to maybe develop them.
Yeah.
Them.
Figure it out. But like, whatever it is, if they're like set to leave, then they're set to leave, but let's transition and make it a win-win.
Yes. I think that's a scary, hard thing for people to do. I did it once in my job when I left, when we were living on the East Coast.
I mean, I was
number three in an organization that had grown to 13 people. And I had been a big part of the growth. And I told my business partner, basically, like, we're going to move in a year. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I'm going to work for you remotely or if I'm going to get a different job, and I won't know until I get there. But we were able to do some strategic hiring in that time and really like lay out a plan.
Well, then let's end this podcast with, may everyone listening have a boss good enough you would tell that you're job hunting.
I'm going to quit. Well, thanks for having me.
Kathy Broder from the Port of Seattle.
Thanks for listening to the Paid Media Playbook. Want more content like this? Follow our agency, Double Z Media, on LinkedIn. You can find the link in the episode description.